This is Matt Spiegel, and I can't wait to bring you season two of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. It's a job so special that even Joe Buck told us he will probably go back to it.
I'm 53, basically 54. I think it's too early to say nevers at this point in my life. I think at some point I'll get the itch again.
Incredible guests sharing great stories from your favorite teams coming this year. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready. Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
Boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception, Reception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Go, Matt Harmon here with you. Oh my goodness, we are, well, by the time you listen to it, it'll be the same day of the draft, but we're recording a day before the draft, and I'm telling you right now, I'm fired up, baby. I am fired. It's been, well, again, one of the most exciting, if not the most exciting offseason in NFL history. And I think we are going to see some movement. I think we're going to see some trades. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to get crazy draft day, man. I can't wait, Matt Harmon, for the draft to get here.
Can't wait either. Yeah, I think there's going to be some surprises. Like I said on the last episode, I just think that everything seems way too clean in terms of like, okay, these are where the quarterbacks are going. These are where the receivers are going. Mm-hmm. No. And by the way, the fact that I'm on Ross St. Brown the morning that we're recording this here, Wednesday morning, signs a bang. $30 million, $28 million, depending on which numbers you're looking at, per year extension sort of hits that top of the – why, you know, it just like establishes this is what wide receiver ones are worth. And, you know, I don't know. Maybe we see someone end up having to trade a top receiver because that that market is too rich for them, right? Like, I think sure. That could happen on – I have a feeling that, like, one round one trade happens for a veteran wide receiver in addition to all this other movement. So, yeah, I'm ready for it, man. I hope I'm not disappointed by the chaos. Usually you're not disappointed by the chaos in the NFL draft.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like this year we won't be.
All right, but for today's show, I thought it'd be fun to do an exercise. We'll do some superlatives for some of these wide receivers. And Matt, you know, hey, listen, you'll throw out some of the top three guys on some of these, but for the most part, I think we can throw them in there, but we'll see what's going on. Listen, we're going to get to best overall route runner, okay, at the end of the show, but we got a few other categories here, and we'll start right here. We'll just right off the jump, Matt. Most likely to exceed draft expectations. So now, again, you could throw the big three in there if you want, but, you know, one of these receivers is probably going to go four. It's going to be awfully tough to exceed those draft expectations. You know what I'm saying? So most likely to exceed draft expectations, unless you think somebody who gets taken in the top, you know, eight or nine picks will exceed draft expectations. That would be a story in and of itself as well.
Right. Yeah. Marvin Harrison Jr. gets drafted fourth overall. He has 2,000 yards as a rookie. I guess that would be exceeding draft expectations,
right, exactly.
Which would, man, that would be pretty exciting. But yeah, I will not go that way. I'm going to try to avoid for most of these picking the top three just because mm-hmm. is boring, you know, but here with this first one, most likely to exceed draft expectations. I actually don't know if I've talked about this guy on this show. I've talked about him on other shows. He's obviously his profile's up on the website, but I think it has to be, and I say most likely, I don't know if I want to bet again. I don't know if I want to bet on this guy as a dude based on some of the stuff we've seen, read, certainly some of the stuff I have heard from people that I trust sources wise, you know, but it's got to be like in terms of a guy that could get drafted later than his mm-hmm. talent level indicates. It has to be Jermaine Burton, who I don't think we have broken down on the show just yet. But you look at him from a success rate versus man and press coverage standpoint. I ended up from just a talent perspective ranking him fourth in the class ahead of Brian Thomas, moving him into that spot because, man, I am just so impressed with his film. He is a guy that wins at all three levels. He's a guy that is super explosive. He gives you downfield ability. He tracks the ball extremely well. He finishes at the catch point. You got to love that from a guy that was a downfield. I mean, you look at some of his – yards per target, yards per catch, average depth of target numbers are insane. But like I said, finishes at the catch point. 32.6% of his sample targets were a contested opportunity. He won 78.6 of those. But that is not because he is not a separator. This is a guy with a 75% success rate versus man, 77.3% success rate versus press, 96.6% success rate on dig routes while running that while running them, 14.6% of his sample routes. I mean, that is like, and he's lining up outside as an X receiver too. I kind of said, like, if his route running gets truly honed, he could be that like outside receiver that wins over the middle, like we love a Brandon Ayuk type, right? That does that, you know. I also think his just style of play from a draft prospect standpoint kind of reminds you a little bit of like a angry, aggressive Chris Olave type. So these are some big names I'm throwing out, but like this dude might legit get drafted on day three, because I mean, if you just Google Jermaine Burton Tennessee fan if you want to see the biggest, most public reason why he struck a female fan coming onto that was rushing the field after a game. Obviously you madness. Can't be doing that under any circumstances. And again, like anytime you talk to people who are in the league, have sources in the league, the first thing they tell you is like, yeah, huge character red flags, like potential character, just like no way. Like you can't have this guy on your team. Don't even think about it. Don't touch him, that type of thing. So, but again, if we're talking about talent-wise, who is most likely to outperform their draft stock, I have this guy ranked fourth in the class, and he might go on day three. So that kind of wild. Just, again, like, do I think it's likely because of the character stuff? I don't know. I mean, I don't know Jermaine Burton. Obviously, this is just all hearsay and stuff. So, but from a talent perspective, he no question is the guy that would fit in here.
Yeah. So this is Jermaine Burton out of Alabama, 6 feet, 196, weighed in at the combine there, ran a 4.45 40, 38.5-inch vertical, 11-1 broad jump. I especially focus in on that 11-1 broad jump because to me that shows he's got some real lateral explosiveness, and I think we saw a lot of that. You talk about that dig run; you need some of that, right? At the stem of that route, and I think he showed a lot of that while at Alabama. The size I think is a little bit interesting too, right? Like 6 feet, 196. He's below that 200-pound threshold that you like to see from generally outside X receivers, but I thought he profiles more as like a flanker slot guy, but it seems as if you feel a little bit more confident that he could play outside too.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Brandon Ayuk, he's about 6 foot, 200 pounds, so he sort of fits into that bucket. And you know, Chris Olave, obviously he's more, a little bit more of a flanker than a true X is Chris Olave, but Stephon Diggs, another guy that's about 6 foot, 200 pounds, you know, and he can play X, he can play flanker. So I think at his peak, of course, and so that's sort of, I think, the type of, because the route running is really good, because the press coverage ability like is great, and the tight coverage, contested catch, ball tracking, everything like that. Those are the traits you want to see from a player that's going to man the X receiver spot. I do think, like, because he stretches the field and because of the size, he could get typecasted into that flanker role, and that's fine. You know, certain offenses are going to want their flanker to stretch the field more than they want their X. So, again, that is certainly possible. But because of the physicality that he plays with, I think he can handle that X receiver spot.
I like it. All right, so most likely to disappoint. So this is the opposite end of the spectrum, okay? So now, again, you can throw the big three in here. I don't think you're going to throw them in because I think you like them all. but again, we're taking a look at, you know, day one, day two types here that, again, may disappoint the fan bases that they get drafted to.
Yeah, I do think A.D. Mitchell is the easy answer here. Just because we've talked about some of the volatility in his profile. You know, another guy that not every team is going to jive with, for sure. That's been reported as well, whether for good reasons or bad reasons or dumb reasons, with the diabetes stuff, like whatever you think about that. You know, Bob McGinn's article on Go Long TD is kind of the place you want to go find that stuff. So, again, another player that sort of fits in that bucket, but I'm not going to go with him here because I overall really like the player, and I overall really buy into the path to him to be a productive X receiver in the NFL. Whether he becomes a true one, I do think that's a different question. So I won't go with him here, even though I think he's the easy answer because he'll probably get drafted in round one. I do think Xavier Leggett is super risky in terms of like likely to disappoint his next team because, man, he just is. he's so volatile, right? We've talked about the risks in his profile as well, and I just can see him getting typecasted into that X receiver spot. I can see him going down the Treylon Burks path or the Jonathan Mingo path of a guy that, all right, I think he needs to be deployed in a certain way. I'm not totally putting him in the big slot bucket, although I think that would be a good way to exploit some of his abilities. The zone especially coverage success on, rate is good. Yeah, especially early on. But I think that he's a guy that, you know, you want to scheme him into certain situations. You want to get him away from that X receiver spot. And I just wonder, I worry about, like, I mean, Carolina, for example, you've seen him in interviews recently say, like, the Panthers have told me if I'm on the board at 33, they are going to pick me. Which, by the way, means nothing, okay?
Like, nothing.
Prospects have been lied to for years about this stuff at all ranges of the draft.
Yeah. Right.
But if they take him, like, I know it's a different coaching staff. We just saw Mingo play out there last year, right, in terms of they didn't have quite a plan for him. Deontay Johnson's a guy that can line up at X. We've seen him line up at X, but I think his best season came last year from an efficiency standpoint when George Pickens was the X receiver, and he was kind of allowed to be used off the ball. Adam Thielen's that slot receiver, so really they have an opening at X. I don't know if that's what I want out of Xavier Leggett. So if he's drafted 33rd overall by the Panthers and, like, they're going to throw him out as an X receiver or even top of the second round to the damn Patriots, right? Like, I think there's a chance I think he just needs to be with the right coaching staff, and he falls into that bucket of players for me.
In a world of freak athletes, Xavier Leggett is top of the class, man. I mean, you're talking about a dude, 6'1", 221. He ran a sub 4.440 at 221. That is ridiculous. He has a 40-inch vertical at 221. That is ridiculous. And the one thing about him, too, is that while his reception perception numbers against man press coverage are bad, pretty good against zone coverage, which is nice. And boy, I tell you, man, just rock solid in contested catch. So the guy can catch, man. The guy can use his hands. He can use his body. And again, I think he, unfortunately, I think for him, I think he probably relies on that way too often. Especially for someone like Matt's liking, which is totally understandable. But he's got some upside, but I definitely see a lot of downside there as well. When we talk about disappointing, by the way, Adam Schefter with a very interesting tweet this morning when he looked at, he had a ESPN researcher look into this. And over the past 20 drafts spanning from the year 2000, wide receivers in the first round actually hit the least. 27% of wide receivers taken in the first round end up being a quote-unquote hit based off of whether or not that the same team that drafted them then signed them to a second contract, right? So only 27% of first-round wide receivers hit. So it's a very, very volatile position, a lot more volatile. It's the most volatile position according to, if we're basing this off of second contracts here. So interesting stuff, and I thought interesting data presented by Adam Schefter. The number one hit rate was center, 92%. Yeah. I will say this. If you're spending a first-round pick on center, I'm assuming that center is freaking good, okay? So maybe that has a little something to do with it, too. And again, wide receivers, definitely one of those positions, Matt, where people fall in love with certain traits, and sometimes that just doesn't work, man. Sometimes that just doesn't work.
Yeah, and it's a tough position to project. You know, we've talked about this, like the different conference levels. The Big 12. I'm talking to you, Big 12. Okay, Pac 12, different discussion. Big 12, I am looking squarely at you in terms of the what's going on with the wide receiver play in that conference specifically, although it doesn't really too much apply to these Texas guys as much this year. But yeah, the center stuff is funny just because it's like the volume of wide receivers that go in the first round versus the volume of centers is obviously a huge disparity. There's not that many centers that are first round picks. But I mean, yeah, receivers, man. Number one, I don't, if we're talking like hits and stuff like that, I don't love the sign a second contract with the next team is determining a hit in the draft, right? Like, I mean, like a certain guy, like we're talking about with these guys might get traded in the first, like say Brandon Ayuk is traded on draft night. I would still categorize that as a hit for the San Francisco 49ers, a hit on that draft pick, but
100%.
He is going to sign a second contract with the next team. So that's a hypothetical, but like, look at just some of the recent draft classes. Man, there have been some absolute mega, like just the whole class is a flame out. 2019, the only two receivers going in the first round, Marquise Brown and N'Keal Harry. And like Marquise Brown, I think was a fine first round pick, but he didn't sign a second contract with his next team, of course, so he's a miss in this study, right? But like N'Keal Harry, total flame out. So that class wasn't very good. You look at the 2017 draft class, three receivers in the top 10, Corey Davis, Mike Williams, John Ross. Like Mike Williams, fine play, like actually good player. You know, John Ross injuries. Corey Davis, I think, you know, is definitely not worth the fifth overall pick, but he's like, all right. Then you look at 2016. I mean, this whole first round is a shit show. Corey Coleman, Will Fuller, Josh Doxton, Laquon Treadwell.
Oh,
even
God.
2015 actually might even be. I mean, it's not worse because Amari Cooper was the fourth overall pick and he was extremely good. Also, by the way, I don't think signed a second contract with the Raiders though, because he was traded to the Cowboys, I think, before the end of his rookie deal. But like Kevin White, Devontae Parker, Nelson Aguilar, Breshad Perriman, Philip Dorsett. Ooh. I mean, that class was horrendous. Ooh. 2014 was good. Oof. 2014 was good. But yeah, I mean, just there have been some mega rough draft classes the last few years that are bringing down the wide receiver position. I do think, like, you go all the way back to some of the years that Schefter is highlighting here. It's just receiver play is so much more different now, even certainly from that 2016 year, where I don't think a lot of those guys, those like raw technicians, are going to get drafted in the first round because there's just so many well-prepared receivers to go now.
Again, 77 total wide receivers go in the first round since the year 2000. 21 of them signed a second contract with their current team that drafted them. So I don't know. Interesting data regardless. But again, I think it does highlight certainly the volatility of the position. I will say this with 100% certainty. Our guy, Matt Harmon, better than 27% hit rate. Let me tell you right now. Okay. They just need, hey, get on the phone, guys. Okay, the GM, if y'all just want to get on the phone, it's all good. Okay, let's run that through reception, for God's sakes. Anyways, we'll move on. Best slot-only receiver in this class. There's plenty of guys who can play slot, but can also kick outside a little bit. Slot-only receiver in this class, Matt Harmon.
Right, so some of the guys that I'm eliminating here that play a decent, or that I think will play a decent bit in the slot, but probably can kick outside a little. Ricky Pearsall, not considered. Ladd McConkey, not considered. Mm-hmm. You know, even Jalen Polk, who we talked about, I think might be a 50-50 slot guy. I'm not going to consider him because I think he can play a little bit outside. So the guy I will give this honor to, I did end up giving a day two ranking to, is Malik Washington out of UVA.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
Malik Washington is a dog, bro. Okay. Northwestern, he doesn't really have a super productive career there. Despite that, UVA's coaching staff recruits him to transfer and basically tells him, we are going to build the whole offense out of you.
Wow.
Like this kind of quote, random sub-6 foot, sub-200 pound receiver.
Yeah.
And all he does is go to UVA and break multiple school records. Okay. He dominates. He's super productive. Okay. Tons of catches, tons of yards, tons of production. Now, from an alignment perspective, he will be in the rookie roundup, which hopefully is up by the time you are listening to this. It should be on the site.
Beautiful.
84.5% of his sample snaps in the slot, 91.2% behind the line of scrimmage. So I do think he profiles as a slot-only player.
Yep.
But despite that, 72.1% success rate versus man, 82.1% success rate versus zone.
There you go.
Fantastic hands. 80% contested catch rate, zero drops in the mini sample that's going to be on the roundup. So love the hands, love the tackle breaking ability, kind of runs like a rolling ball of butcher knives. So I do think he's like a slot only receiver. I do tend to love this archetype of guys, like the good route runners who are also give you a little something something in terms of after catch and contested catch ability. Just a super reliable player that I think will go, I think conservatively, maybe he's an early day three pick, but for my money, you know, we've seen guys like Wandale Robinson and like Rondale Moore go on the second day of the NFL draft. And like, dude, I mean, this guy's so much better than both of those players as a prospect. So I would love to see some team make like a big bet on him as a you know, round three type of player, top 100 type of pick, because I think certain teams will really value this archetype of receiver.
Jacob Coing out of Arizona, also, I think, in consideration there as a slot-only receiver that could make a little bit of noise in the NFL. But I really like this Malik Washington guy, too. Only saw a couple of games of his, but I'm surprised that they built their whole offense around him. But maybe I shouldn't be surprised is the point that I'm making here. But great player at a UVA is Malik Washington. Okay, so... what do we got here? So we've got the best slot only receiver in this class, best lunch pail receiver in this class. I'm talking, you know, this guy's going to get grimy for you. All right. Run blocking. He's going to get physical, tough at the catch point. You know, like Amon-Ra St. Brown, you know, just mad toughness, man. Who's the best lunch pail receiver in this class?
Yeah, I feel like this has got to be our dude Jalen Polk for sure. The not next Puka Nacua, next Nuka Puka Nacua type here for Jalen Polk. If you've read his RP profile, I love the way this guy works the middle of the field. Just fearless, gets after it in the run game. Pretty solid blocker there. Is absolutely willing to throw his body around and set the tone. I could totally see him. You know, again, he's. It's pretty crazy, especially early in the season. I think maybe before the Rams realized like this guy was going to be a superstar producer in terms of Puka Nacua,
right.
Like consistently how they were involving him as a blocker in the run game. I don't know if Jalen Polk is quite that willing and able to be a blocker, but I think he's pretty close. So that's part of it. And just like the hands, we've talked about it. I think this guy's got great hands. When he's in contested situations, he fights for the ball. He tracks the ball extremely well. I think he has the same, not to the same degree, but similar sort of tracking and technique and timing that Roma Dunze has. So I just think in terms of lunch pail receivers, he's going to do the dirty work. Going to block a little, going to work the middle of the field, plays with some physicality. Yeah, give me Jalen Polk for this one all day.
Jalen Polk out of Washington, 6'1", 203, ran a 4.52 40 with a 37.5-inch vertical. Doesn't have that twitchiness you like to see from top-end dudes, but, man, the catch rate is, as Matt was alluding to, the catch rate is 4 days. I mean, this guy can fully extend in every single direction. He's going to be one of these, like, you know, quarterbacks are going to love this guy, man.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you know, great hands. Catch radius is just all over the field. Can adjust to the ball in the air, too, man. I think quarterbacks are going to love Jalen Polk here out of Washington. All right. Most likely to be a deep ball specialist. I'm talking like Ted Ginn. Give me a Ted Ginn type. You know, again, we know guys like Odunze and Marvin Harris. These guys are going to win downfield. Okay, I get it. You know, Brian Thomas, oh, God, the guy's going to win downfield. But he's not going to be a deep ball specialist. Who's going to be a deep ball specialist in this class, Matt?
So when you say, like, Ted Ginn, are you saying that when you say specialist, like, this is what he gets pigeonholed as? Is that
sure.
What we're talking with this category?
Well, okay, so clarify that for me, because I'm assuming you don't think Ted Ginn was a deep ball only dude?
Oh, no, I do. But I'm saying, I'm saying,
okay.
I'm saying, is this guy that I'm basically, like we're saying here, he is pigeonholed in sort of that role. That
yes.
is who he is correctly. He's correctly pigeonholed in that role.
Yes.
Because part of me wanted to say Javon Baker, because we've talked about his just unbelievable downfield ability, the amount of go routes that he ran. You know, we discussed that. And I wanted to say him, but I think there's more to his game. So I don't think he makes
sure.
It makes sense here. So I will go with Troy Franklin, who I've just really talked. him and Xavier Legette, the two most difficult players to evaluate, and I've actually bumped Franklin down a little bit in my rankings just because I think there are some real questions about his overall full field ability. And he's perfect for the Ted Ginn archetype because, like, he's going to give you those soul-crushing drops down the field just like old Teddy Ginn did, baby.
Oh,
so
totally.
He makes sense for this pick 100%. For multiple different reasons. But like, is a legit downfield threat, right? 75% success rate on post routes, 66.7% on corner routes, 74.7% on nine routes. Like, he can run those deep routes extremely well. He's going to cut the defense's heart out, and then he's going to cut your heart out sometimes too. So, I mean, if there's a Ted Ginn in this class,
that's
I think it's Troy Franklin, even though I think there's a little bit more sizzle to his route running. I just need some more steak from him along with the sizzle in terms of his ability to beat press coverage and win in tight coverage consistently. And that's where I sort of wonder if he gets kind of grouped into that Ted Ginn bucket of producers.
Yeah, Troy Franklin, better versus zone than man. You know, we're talking about a guy who's, 6'2", but only weighed 176. That was surprising. He ran that 4.41, but as Matt and I had talked about previously on previous episodes, he plays fast. You know, he plays faster than I think his 4.41 would indicate. And by the way, 4.41, that's a seriously fast player. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But he plays faster than his 4.41, which I think is really impressive as well. You throw that in with that 39-inch vertical, man, and certainly this is a guy that can win over the top, man. But again, those hands. Oh, God, those hands.
We'll see.
It hurts you. It hurts you to see those hands sometimes, but Troy Franklin, great deep ball specialist. I think he'll play in this league a long time, just doing that one thing, which is again going downfield and trying to cut that cover too. So there you go. Most likely to win a contested catch, Matt Harmon. What say you here, pal?
I mean, how can we not give this to Roma Dunze? Okay, like I know I said I want to avoid the top three, but how can we not give this to Rome, man? It would just be irresponsible for a player who saw a contested target on 23.4% of his sampled targets and had a class high 88.9% contested catch rate, which is first by a lot. Okay.
Crazy.
So, I mean, how can we, the second place guy was his teammate, Jalen Polk, who we talked about earlier. So, I just think it would be crazy to give it to anybody else other than Rome. Kevin Clark did a great interview. I was actually on the second half of the show, so you can skip that. You've heard enough of me. But the first half of the show was actually an interview with Rome Odunze recently, and Rome really went into – and I was honestly like – I went back and listened to it, and I was so happy that Rome went into the details of like the technique and timing of winning contested catches. Cause like, you know, Kevin sort of asked, how do you like take me through the art of winning contested catches? And, you know, typically look, I mean, you're just going to hear a guy talk about like, you know, I got to be bigger and stronger and fit more physical than the guy across from me, you know, box him out and like have a my ball mentality and all that. And like that stuff is important. But for me, what like I listened to Rome Odunze in this interview and he talks about it's the timing, it's the late hands, it's making sure you are in position and you time that jump and you put your hands up at the more appropriate deceptive time to win that contested pass against the DB. Like you hear a guy like that talk and you're like, yeah, no kidding, he's the best in the class at this because he has put the work into the details of the position.
Yeah.
And this is like, how is this guy going to not be a good pro, number one? And how is he not going to be an instant hit from a 50-50 ball perspective? So look, yeah, do I want to avoid the top three guys? I did, but I think for this specific one, it has to go to Rome Odunze. Otherwise, it would be irresponsible.
Okay, there you go. All right, if we're getting outside of the top three, let me throw three names out here for you because of the guys that I've seen, these are the guys that I think are really great in contested catch, okay? Obviously, my dude, I'm caping up for my dude, Javon Baker. Okay, there's Javon Baker in this mix. I think Xavier Legette is in this mix as well if we're getting outside of Rome Odunze. Keon Coleman, I think, is really good in contested catch as well. You know, he's got some other things that he needs to work on in his profile, but I think contested catch, though, good, man. I like him in contested catch. So let me throw those three names out there for you. Keon Coleman at FSU, Xavier Legette out of South Carolina, Javon Baker out of UCF. best contested catch guy out of those three dudes.
Yeah, and some of the data is tough for these guys because who's throwing them the ball? Like, mm-hmm. that does matter when we're talking about contested targets and, like, how catchable is it. You know, I don't know how other places track it, but, like, if you're in a contested opportunity and, like, you've got to reach through a defender and, like, that ball is still short, like, I'm not even going to include that in the sample because I think it has to be a winnable contested target for us to evaluate the player. I don't really care in terms – I'm not, you know, trying to say, like, this is how many exactly – you know, it's a sample of games and we're trying to evaluate the player.
Yeah.
That is something that is not – like, it's not – that's not the player's fault, right? We're trying to isolate receivers from surrounding variables. So for some places, like, some of these guys are going to have lower contested catch rates than I would, or lower contested target rates. But for example, even in my data, I think the fact that, like, Javon Baker's at sub 70%, not that it's bad, 68.2%, but I think some of that was those passes could have been cleaner. You know what I'm saying? Okay.
More catchable,
Keon Coleman, sure. I know is definitely a guy that played with an erratic quarterback. I do think that. I also think A.D. Mitchell deserves to be considered here in terms of like a pure ball winner. I think he deserves to be considered here. But of these three guys, I would rank them Leggett, Coleman, Baker in terms of like contested catch ball winners. I just really do like the like, I know I just gushed about timing and execution and technique and all that, but man, I do love the way that Xavier Leggett is just a physical man in those tight coverage situations. So I will go with him in the top spot here.
You know, I think with both Leggett and Baker, what I really like is their ability to catch contested balls deep downfield. Mm-hmm. They've got great body control. They do a little shifting. Some of the hand fighting stuff. I mean, especially when we're talking about Leggett, the hand fighting stuff, man. Oh, you want to fight off a 220-pound receiver deep downfield? Good luck. Okay, because my guy Leggett, man, he's just so good with the hands. Very subtle. And it's not one of those like blatant push-offs. You know what I'm saying? He's not stiff arming a guy. He's pushing the defender's lower body, but he's so strong. He creates just enough separation to pull down that ball. So I've got no argument there. I probably would have Baker ahead of Coleman, though.
Mm.
Coleman's got great hands, but the one thing about Coleman that drives me nuts sometimes is, does he need to make some of these catches that he...
Yeah, I...
You know what I'm saying? Like, sometimes I just feel like he's just messing around almost, you know? Like, if he just posted his body in, like, a better spot, like, it wouldn't be as contested as it looks is the point that I'm making, you know? So, like, a lot of the... I feel like he creates some of those contested catch opportunities, whereas when we're talking about Baker, I mean, the guy's, you know, the quarterback play was not great. And for me, he's just a straight up artist when we're talking about trying to catch that ball, you know, with a defender draped all over him, you know?
Yeah, I think he's a great tracker of the football, is Javon Baker. So, no, I think that one's closer. And I think it's totally fair to say he's, I mean, just in terms of contested catch rate in reception perception, you know, since we're comparing these guys, I mean, 81.8% for Xavier Leggett, for Javon Baker, it's 68.2%, like I mentioned, and for Keon Coleman, it's 70.6%. So those two, I think, are closer than Leggett.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, makes sense. All right, so there you go. All right, most intriguing rando day three pick. Give it to me.
Okay, so I'll give you two answers here because one is like a real answer. Like I think the spirit of your question here is more so this the second guy I'll give, but the first one I'll give is like I do think Johnny Wilson out of FSU is really intriguing because this is a guy who's been sort of painted as a we got to move him to tight end. Okay, got to move him to tight end.
God, he's huge
because he's huge, but like James. Johnny Wilson, like, okay, put it this way. If he is taken as a tight end and, like, his next team's going to move him to tight end, you can basically forget about this guy for, like, 2 to 3 years. It'd be like Darren Waller, right, where he's not even a thing until, like, his second team, second contract type situation. Uh-huh. Because, like, he doesn't do any tight end stuff. In his reception perception sample for the rookie roundup, he was outside right wide on 48.1% of his snaps. He was left wide on 41.8% of his snaps. So he was in the slot on only 10%. And he was on the line of scrimmage on 72.8%. Like, he's a pure X receiver, much more than Keon Coleman was at FSU. So he ran against a lot of press man coverage and, like, low-key pretty good at separating against press man. 71.4% success rate versus man, 74% against press. Like, I don't know what to do with him because I think there is a, like, is he just too big to be a receiver? I think that's possible. Mm-hmm. Also, what a journey in contested situations, and not a good way. Like, and he has, he doesn't have very good hands either.
Nope.
So, like, what is that? You know, I don't know what he is. So in terms of intriguing, I'm intrigued to find out because I don't know the answer and I don't have a lot of confidence. Like, I'm not going to come here and tell you, like, oh yeah, Johnny Wilson, he's going to be a baller, because, like, I don't know. But I could see him being maybe like a big, just hulking receiver with this great length and stuff like that. I if I'm drafting Johnny Wilson, we're trying him at receiver first before we even think about tight end. And then again, by the way, like, then we got to get his hand in the dirt and all this stuff. I just don't even know what to do with him. So in that way, he's intriguing. The real answer to this, though, in terms of, I think, the spirit of your question, is Aeneas Smith out of Texas A&M. Smaller guy, ran 81.5% of his snaps from the slot in reception perception, but the guy does know how to get open, okay? 74% success rate versus man, 77.8% success rate versus zone, so pretty solid numbers on both of those. I like his hands, wins in tight coverage. He wins on routes like digs and posts, so, like, could be a potential vertical slot options. Out routes, 12.6% of his sampled routes were out routes, 85.7% success rate, so maybe, yeah, like a little vertical slot option. I've seen some people potentially compare him to, like, a Curtis Samuel, where he does some of the gadgety stuff. You want to get him the ball in space, pretty good run after catch option. He does break some tackles for sure. I think he's got some real route running to him, some real technique and separation against man coverage, which, yeah, maybe that does fit in the Curtis Samuel bucket.
All right, there you go. I know absolutely nothing about, and I did not watch a lot of Texas A&M.
Fair enough. Wasn't a fun watch, so.
Okay, well, there you go. So I am intrigued. He's 5'9", 190 pounds. Smallish hands, though, 8.5-inch hands. Can I go back to Johnny Wilson real quick? 6'6", 231. That's what he weighed in at the combine. And again, when we talk about hand size, Jesus Christ, 10-inch hands for Johnny Wilson. Ran a 4.5 240 with a 37-inch vertical. Honestly, man, given his size, like at 230 pounds running a 4.5 2, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's just that I think his hands are just, I mean, they're awful.
Why is he? He's got these massive mitts. What's he doing with them?
I don't know. Dude, I don't know. I have no idea. But his hands are, I just think they're just straight up bad. And like, you can't see him play receiver and not think about like Devin Funchess. It's like impossible, you know, just because, again, Funchess is another dude that, you know, was really big for that, you know, position group and everything like that.
Yeah, Devin Funchess, I'm just looking it up now. He's last listed at 6'4", 225. So even like,
wow,
Johnny Wilson is much bigger. I mean, you just don't see a lot of these, receivers built in this package, right? I do think maybe like late Vincent Jackson is maybe a good comparison for him.
Yeah.
He
was like 6'5", 6'4", something like that.
Yeah, I think he's 6'5", and like over 220 pounds. Malcolm Floyd, how big was Malcolm Floyd? I don't think he was nearly this big. Oh, no, he was 6. Yeah, Malcolm Floyd, 6'5", 225, former Chargers receiver.
They're always Chargers. Always Chargers.
Yeah, Phillip Rivers like cornered the market on absolutely big absurd big ass receivers for a while, but like 100%. You look at Malcolm Floyd from 2009 to 2014, over 700 yards in every single season except 2013, when he only played two games, and in those two games he did have six catches for 149 yards. So like, I don't know, maybe that's a good player comparison, another just like pure outside receiver who you just threw the ball to downfield. I mean, look at the yards per catch figures. in the same stretch I'm talking about here for old Malcolm Floyd, 17.2, 19.4, 19.9 led the NFL in 2011 wow. in yards per reception, 14.5. And then in that two games, 24.8, and then 16.5 in 2014 before his final season in 2015, 18.7 yards per reception there for old Malcolm Floyd. Maybe that is the – God, he was 34 years old. 30 Amazing. Years old is when he led the NFL in yards per reception. So maybe that's the comparison for Johnny Wilson, although I think he is interesting in terms of, like, you look at some of his short routes, like, he's got really good success rate on these short routes because I think he's got some real fluidity and ability to sink and, like, throttle down and get back up to speed. The press coverage is really nice because he's got good release moves off the line of scrimmage. So, yeah, he is very intriguing. I could see him if he develops and works on those MF in hands, he could be like that Malcolm Floyd. I don't know Malcolm Floyd's drop numbers off the top of my dome, and I'm not going to
say that
PFF. But like, we're just throwing him go routes, and he's going up and getting them, but he's got to work on the hands for sure.
Vincent Jackson, by the way, I just looked this up. I'm like shocked, okay? This is according to NFLCombineResults.com. Vincent Jackson was 241 pounds. And the guy ran a 4.5 flat with a 39-inch vertical at 241 pounds. When they do similar athletic profiles, he profiles to like Quay Walker, Manny Lawson, guys who are linebackers, dude. Like this is crazy. That is nuts. Vincent Jackson, straight up outside linebacker, playing, you know, X receiver for the Chargers. That's awesome.
Yeah, and you look at Vincent Jackson, again, super productive player. Took a little minute to get going, but from 2008 to then 2014, he changed teams in the middle there to Tampa Bay for those final three seasons of this stretch. 1,000 yards, 7 touchdowns, 1,100 yards, 9 touchdowns, only plays 5 games in 2010, but 248 yards, 3 touchdowns. 1,100 yards, 9 touchdowns, 1,300 yards, 8 touchdowns in his first season with the Bucs, where he led the NFL, too, in yards per reception, 19.2. Nice. 1,200 yards, 7 touchdowns, 1,000 yards, and 2 touchdowns with a lot of high yards per reception figures there for Vincent Jackson. Of course, again, the late Vincent Jackson, who sort of ceded that role then from 2014 on to Mike Evans as the number one target there. For the Tampa Bay Bucks. But yeah, that's sort of the group of players we're talking about here, which, yeah, again, the spirit of your question, like, I know what people want to hear. Your boy Matt Harmon is being asked, most intriguing rando receiver, like, who do you think is going to be the sleeper? I do think Anaya Smith is kind of my answer there. But,
right.
Yeah, part of me, right, James, like, people want me to chart Johnny Wilson. I'm like, I don't want to chart Johnny Wilson because then people are going to throw it back in my face when he converts to tight end and they're like, yeah, bro, you already charted a tight end. You did Johnny Wilson. But, like, this guy is not doing any tight end things on his film.
Oh, my God.
Right?
That's chess right there. That's 4D chess.
Oh, brother, this is how hard – and how deep the chart tight end bros are in my head, okay? Yeah. Like, they're living rent-free right up here, okay?
Right there.
We're in one of the highest rent per capita areas here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. They've got a free stay right here in my brain in terms of the chart and tight end stuff. And that is why the Johnny Wilson thing, I pushed it off for a little bit. I was like, I don't want to do this. But then, like, I heard enough smart, you know, J.J. Zacharyson's like, hey, Trump's production model, pretty interesting. I saw, like, the underdog bros, Josh Norris and Hayden Winks, like, no, this is a receiver, okay, like, not a tight end. I was like, oh, shit, I'm going to have to do it. And I did it, and it is intriguing. So, I mean, I did not think we'd spend, you know, this amount of time talking about Malcolm Floyd and Vincent Jackson.
I know. I love it, though. I love it.
But, like, that is sort of – and I think I might have – a profile. I definitely don't have any reception perception data on Malcolm Floyd. I might have. I gotta look back at the historical data. I might have one on Vincent Jackson, right? Maybe that 20. But I'm not 100% sure. It would definitely be one of the later seasons in Tampa Bay, just based on RP timeline, right? Because it's 2014 and beyond. I bet there's something. I bet there's something on the site, and I'll give it a comparison with old Johnny Wilson.
I'm gonna look. I don't see
it. Yeah, I'm looking right now, too, and yeah, I don't see it.
Yeah, but that would be... it's a good conversation, but mostly because, again, both those guys are good players, man, as you kind of sort of highlighted, but especially Vincent Jackson. Vincent Jackson was a good-ass player, man. He was good. He was, you know, in his prime, you know, we're talking, you know, Mike Evans level good, you know, like this guy was absolutely a stud. I mean, in 2012, when he played for Tampa Bay, when he had nearly 1,400 yards, 8 touchdowns, averaging 19.2 yards per reception. Come on, bro. Like, that's outrageous. This is when, oh my God, I looked up at this 2012 Tampa Bay team. Greg Schiano was the head coach for this Tampa team. Good night. You know who his quarterback was? Josh Freeman. Oh.
Yeah, wow. I remember Josh Freeman. Jeez. Hey, Dan Orlovsky is on this team.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
The other Mike Williams.
The other Mike on this Williams. Team,
so. That's right. Also, I think, unfortunately, has passed away. So, RIP to both of those. Dallas Clark is on this team?
What?
What the hell are we talking about? But like,
well,
this is
Hey, listen, we'll go down memory lane here because we got the muscle hamster. Doug Martin was on this team. One of my favorite players of all time, LeGarrette Blount, was on this team as well. What a running back room that was. Muscle hamster and LeGarrette Blount. Good night. Again, better bring your lunch because those guys are going to take it to you, man. Those guys are going to take it to you.
Yeah, all this talking we're doing, they were fourth in the NFC South with somehow 7-9. That was the record. That might these days, that'll win you the NFC South.
Yeah, I was going to say, that'll take you to the playoffs. That'll take you to the playoffs. Come on, dude. No, but I mean, hey, listen, it's Greg Schiano, for God's sakes. All right, so there you go. Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. All right. I don't know how we got down this road, but I love it. But okay, we're going to cap off the show here with best overall route runner. Drum roll, please. Best overall route runner, Matt Harmon.
Yeah, this
and
is
again,
where
we're incorporating all the dudes, all those, the big three. Okay, we're going. Best overall route runner, go Matt Harmon, go.
Yeah, I'm going to give this to my top-ranked player. I'm going to give it to Marvin Harrison. Look, Rome Odunze, obviously number one in success rate versus man and press in the class. He has an all-green route tree. He is a close call here in terms of best overall route runner. But if we are including the big three, I do think we have to excluding those guys, then I think we're having the Ricky Pearsall conversation, of course. But I think if we're including the big three, you know, Marvin Harrison pressed on 25.6% of his sampled routes, a 78.7% success rate, 83.2% success rate versus zone, 74% success rate versus man. I just think he is so well-rounded as a technician. I love the way he works vertically. I mean, his slant routes are just like a thing of beauty. Like a guy that is that size, like tell me he's not catching 4 touchdowns on slant routes in his rookie season. Okay.
For
like
sure.
He's your boundary player, only guy over there. I mean, maybe they're going to double cover him because he got so much double coverage in college, but like, he's just your boundary guy, backside, Kyler Murray, whoever it is dropping back and like immediately throws that slant because he just knows he is going to work open technically. So precise, just so polished. Obviously, his dad's a former NFL receiver.
Right.
Yeah, it all shows up in his film. He's like weirdly polished for a collegiate player. So, yeah, just someone to be so excited about, I think, from a route running perspective. And he does it all at X receiver, right? 78.9% of his snaps were outside. 78.9% of his snaps were on the line of scrimmage. I think he can win from different alignments, but the fact that he does all this from the true X spot, you know, he's the full package for sure.
I love it. Okay, well, let's get into that conversation very quickly while we got you. You take away the big three. Who is your best route runner if you're taking away, you know, Rome Odunze, Harrison, and Malik Nabers?
Yeah, I think this is where we give it to Ricky Pearsall, Slick Rick. I love
ruler. Let's go.
I love Ricky Pearsall's route running. You know, again, in the success rates, it really shows up. 75.8% success rate versus man, 82.2% success rate versus zone. I think he's number two in the class in success rate versus man, and he's right up there with some of these top guys in his ability to beat zone coverage. I just think his pacing of his routes is great. I think the ability to snap off routes is really impressive. You know, he's definitely not the you know, his nine route success rate's not good. Didn't run a lot of nine routes, but like he can't really necessarily like stack and shed defensive backs on the outside against press man coverage. But like comebacks, curls, excuse me, not comebacks, curls, slants, digs, you know, out routes, like those are all great. The short route running is fantastic. And what really does make me super interested in him is that, like, you look at the post-route success rate, 70.1%. Like, I think he really sells that go route when he can get a free release pretty well and snap into the middle of the field. Like, he could definitely drive some daggers home in terms of his ability to run those type of deep routes. So I would give Ricky Pearsall the award if we exclude the Marvin Harrisons and the Roma Dunzes.
So I think another player that was in the mix, at least right there, would be Ladd McConkey. But what's the thought process behind Pearsall ahead of Ladd?
I think Pearsall is a more physical player, and I think he plays through contact better, and I think he has a wider variety of release moves than Ladd McConkey does, or at least in terms of he can execute those release moves effectively, right? Like,
right.
You look at Ladd McConkey, and it's 44% success rate versus press is actually the lowest in terms of the main players profiled. I do think that's an issue. Like, It's not that it's going to damn him from being an outside receiver, but I think it is going to put like a hard cap on his overall role.
Can't play X.
It's going to make him cannot play X. Like that just not with the 44% success rate.
Mm-hmm.
Pearsall 67.7%. You know, that's certainly not one of the best scores in the class, but it's solid.
Get it
it's
done.
Pretty rock yep. solid. Yeah, it can get done. Get it done. So I think that's sort of just where I come down with the Pearsall versus Ladd McConkey conversation is just the work off the line of scrimmage is better for Pearsall, which is ultimately why I ended up putting him one spot higher in my stacked rankings as well. Those guys are very close to me, but that's the tiebreaker in this conversation and honestly just the overall conversation in addition to contested catchabilities better for Ricky Pearsall than it is for Ladd McConkey.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Let's make it happen. So there you go. Those are your superlatives for this 2024 draft class. A lot of great names and a lot of great insight, I think, right there being provided by Matt as well. It's draft day, man. Let's go. I hope everyone has a great draft day. We're going to be back. By the way, if you stuck with us this long, obviously, I know people are going to be wanting that draft reaction. That's coming next week. We want to get the full picture. We want to get the full picture of the draft, days 1, 2, and 3, and then we're going to react. All right. So, again, we're going to react, but that's going to come next week after we get a full picture of what the draft looks like. All right, but for now, we got to go, man. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Coe. We'll see you. And remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. Peace.